Show.
Hey, it's the Jen Weigel Show. We are here until midnight. Joining me in studio right now, I've got Jacqueline Saper. Jacqueline, thank you for being here. I know you're on the rounds with your book, A Girl in Revolutionary Iran. It's from miniskirt to hijab, and it's a wonderful, compelling read, only from what I learned from Neil Steinberg's article today in the Chicago Sun-Times, right inside the inside flap. But you were there. You were right across the street when this happened. And so I'm very grateful that you're here in studio again today, November 4th, 1979, marking the 40th anniversary of the hostage crisis in Iran. It was in Tehran. And of course, the U.S. Embassy was attacked and seized on that day. And thank you for being a witness, for writing about it, and then being here to talk about it today.
Well, thank you, Jen. It's a pleasure to be here today.
So you were telling me the story. 18 years old, you're across the street, you knew something wasn't right. So give us the recap of what was going on for you, Jacqueline.
Yeah, it's as clear as day to me now. Mm-hmm. Actually, I was 18 and 8 months old, and I was a newlywed.
Oh, gosh. A newlywed at 18.
Yes,
oh, geez.
I was.
Oh,
my gosh. And I was at the upscale Tahte Jamshid Avenue. That's okay. Where all the boutiques were.
Mm-hmm.
And it was about a block away from the embassy.
Mm-hmm.
I was looking into the window of a boutique, and I was, you know, I was contemplating on buying my husband, and It was an Yves Saint Laurent cologne. I saw the crowds at the first gathering in front of the red brick wall and the dark green iron fence of the embassy.
Okay.
I mean, the embassy was huge.
Right.
It was about 27 acres, the whole block.
Wow.
And I heard commotion.
Mm-hmm.
Now, at first I thought it was the, you know, the American consulate. There was a long line in front of it all the time. I thought maybe it's the line for the consulate, for visas. But this was different. You know, as I moved closer, I noticed the crowd was angry. They were throwing their fists in the air and shouting angrily, "Death to America! Death to America!" And, you know, from past experience living through the Islamic Revolution, which had started earlier that year, mm-hmm. I was used to seeing unusual things, but this seemed worse and out of the ordinary.
Right. Well, that's what I'm wondering. So give me an idea of the temperature, of the climate in Iran at that time. Like you say, the Islamic Revolution had already begun earlier that year. Things were tense. It was not ideal. And it continued to be tense and is still tense to this day, I would gather.
Right.
So on this day, here we are 40 years later, but what was the climate leading up to it? I mean, really, you do say in your book, from miniskirt to hijab. So
yes.
You were able to wear miniskirts and have these freedoms that you, were completely stripped away. And then you've got to be wearing the hijab. Your daughter's got to be wearing it. And here you are of Jewish faith, and
correct.
You have to follow these these rules.
Yes.
So how was it before all this went down? And then how quickly did it change?
Very quickly. Everything went down very fast.
Yeah.
I mean, in 1978, we were still wearing miniskirts. It was still, very westernized. And then the latter part of 78, it became the revolution uprising began.
Right.
And the most alarming was the anti-US and anti-Israeli sentiments.
Right.
And as Jewish citizens, we felt, it was an Islamic Republic that they wanted. We felt outcasts.
Mm-hmm.
And finally, in January of, from August of 1978 till February of 1979, we went through a very volatile time of the revolution. The oil industry was on strike, shortage of gas.
President Carter was in quite a mess.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And President Carter was in Iran on New Year's Eve of 1978.
Wow.
And Rosalind Carter,
mm-hmm.
There was a reception at the Niavaran Palace where the Shah, the king, lived. And I saw the reception on TV, and President Carter raised his glass and made a toast to the Shah. Shah was the king.
Mm-hmm.
And he said, "This is to you, your majesty, for your leadership and for Iran being an island of stability in the turbulent Middle East."
Mm.
And just a few months later, the revolution began.
Everything blew up.
Yes.
And it's a shame, too, because it was so, like you say, from miniskirts. It was very Western, and it was beautiful. And I'm not saying it's not now, but now, because of all of the radical Islamic, you know, beliefs, and like you say, these protests against the West and against Israel,
yes.
It makes it so tense. You talk about how your friends started leaving, you were feeling abandoned, and then you wanted to come, but it's hard to get, you know, how do you get here? How did you get here?
Well, when the revolution happened, all the foreigners, there were about 60 to 80,000 Americans alone living in Tehran,
mm-hmm.
as well as other expats. But all foreigners were evacuated. For them, it was easy. You know, they were just taken out of the country and went back home. Mm-hmm. But for many Iranians, religious minorities, or many other Iranians who were associated with the Shah's regime, they all wanted to get out. There were not enough planes for everybody. And Tehran, the capital city, the international Mehrabad International Airport, was the only international airport in the whole country. And just being Iranian, I mean, you can't just pick up and go. You have family, you have jobs, and then you need visas, you need to know another language. It was very difficult.
So how did you get here?
How did I get here? Well, my story is a little unique because especially the Jewish minority community, majority left in the 1978-79 or mm-hmm. immediately after that. I stayed behind for 8 more years.
Mm.
And I left in March of 1987. Remember, Iran was involved in a brutal war with its neighboring country, Iraq, for 8 years.
Yes.
And at first the borders were closed, and when they were reopened, it was not an official written law, but it was an unofficial law that the Jewish minority had a very difficult way. They could not get passports. They wouldn't. I was never going to get a passport. They wouldn't allow me to get one. I don't know. Just because of that.
And we had Ronald Reagan over here. I'm trying to think of where I was at that time. So then, how did you finally get your passport? I mean, how did that write itself? Because it's not easy.
Not easy. It's a whole chapter, a whole part. My part 5 of my book is called Resolve, and that's how we got out. I was married at the time, as I mentioned.
You had your daughter.
And I had 2 children, a 6-year-old and a 2-year-old.
Wow.
And just like many others before me, we had a beautiful home. My husband was a surgeon. He was a professor of surgery for 8 years. Beautiful home and everything. We had to lock the door, just leave everything behind and come out.
And that's the thing, too. People don't realize that, you know, in this crisis of people trying to come here and get citizenship, it's people who are, for 8 years, surgeons, right? Leaving behind beautiful homes and beautiful lives and families.
Yes.
You know, what do you think is one of the biggest misconceptions that that Americans have over Iranians and the people that came here, especially during that time, and people who are still trying to come here because it's still tumultuous?
Well, Iran is a very ancient land. You know, it's 2,500 years of history.
Sacred,
and the revolution does not, you know, reduce that. It's has a rich culture, a lot of beautiful poets and language. But it also has the largest brain drain in the world. And the best of the best have left Iran to America's gain. I mean, the Iranian-American community here are very successful. A lot of highly educated businessmen. Mm-hmm. So it's a shame. It's a shame that it is that way.
If you are just joining us, I am sitting here with author Jacqueline Saper, who wrote the book From Miniskirt to Hijab, A Girl in a Revolutionary Iran. And she is rocking the I'm sorry, but it's a Charlie's Angels haircut right here, 1979. Beautiful, beautiful girl. You're 18 at the time when this took place, November 4th, 1979. So tell me this, Jacqueline, what is happening in Iran today as this anniversary is happening? How are they remembering it, if at all? Are they remembering it? What do they call the embassy, all of that?
Yeah. Today, well, the former two-story building of the U.S. Embassy compound, it's a popular site, and it's a cultural center. And believe it or not, it's known as the Den of Spies.
Mm.
There's a large placard sign against the brick wall and the iron gates at the front. And it displays the words U.S. Den of Espionage, former U.S. Embassy, in both English and Farsi.
Wow.
You know, Farsi is Persian, the same language.
Mm-hmm.
And every year, thousands of Iranians rallying Tehran to mark the anniversary of the U.S. embassy takeover. Yes. Their cries of death to America and death to Israel is broadcast on the state-run media.
Oh, no kidding, yeah. Really?
And they burn, obviously, you know, their same routine, burned yep. American flags. And, mm-hmm. and actually, the November 4th in Iranian calendar is known as the National Day of the Fight Against Global Arrogance, which is a reference to what Iran considers American imperialism. But it's very important to say, I don't believe that this is the sentiment of all Iranians.
Okay, and that's another misconception I yes. think that many here in the West have. So do tell us, Jacqueline, because that is your native land. What do you think is the sentiment of Iranians to the West?
Well, today Iran is a land of 83 million. Mm-hmm. When the revolution happened, there were only 35 million.
Okay.
So what that means is 70% of the population are around 30, 35 years old. Mm-hmm. For them, the hostage crisis is just ancient history. They were not there. They cannot relate to it. And Iran is a land that, as I said, majority of young, but the leadership is old. The supreme leader is 80 years old, and he's had this position for 30 years, Ayatollah Khamenei, and he'll have it for life.
Right. Wow, so you're an author. Your husband was a surgeon. What did he do when he got here to the States?
Well, that was, we left everything behind.
Yes, of course.
And unfortunately, in the United States, they would not accept his education. He was a foreign educated person, so he had to go through residency all over again.
He had to do med school. Listen to that,
listeners. They took the med school.
Okay, they did.
But residency.
The residency, okay.
Which is 5 years.
Oh.
So we went to Houston to his brother. He had mm-hmm. a younger brother. We lived with him in a small apartment for 14 months with two kids. Oh. And my husband went, he worked, but he also took classes to pass the, you know, cumbersome, very difficult exams.
Sure.
And he found a residency in Chicago. And he redid the residency all over again, but they forgave 1 year.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay, and so then, he's practicing here in Chicago
right,
now.
But, you know, America, it is a land of opportunity because in Iran, I was denied an education, not only a passport, but an education, which is, I fully explained why in my
your
book.
Memoir, yeah.
Again, it's because of religious discrimination.
Mm.
And when I came to America, I had an opportunity. You know, at the age of 29, I went back to school and I went to business school. I became a certified public accountant. Of course, now I'm doing other work. I volunteer with refugees and asylum seekers. And our two children, that was the main reason we got out, for their future.
And they were 6 and 2 at the
six
time.
6 and 2. My mm-hmm. daughter is now an attorney. Mm-hmm. She has her own law firm.
Wow.
Yeah, she is an intellectual property attorney, and my son is an orthopedic surgeon. So it worked out well. So we never
it worked out.
Yeah, we
yes.
never, you know, we contributed to America, and we never got anything from the government.
And the thing is a lot of stories are like yours. They come, you come, and you integrate, and your children are educated, and you re-educate yourselves.
Yes.
I mean, that is so much work, and it is to be honored and respected. And I hope that people who are listening, instead of getting into their head of whatever profiling they might be doing about people who come from Tehran and Iran, to understand that education and lives were just left behind to come.
Right.
And because of all of this terrible radical Islamic, you know,
rhetoric.
The rhetoric yes. of also not giving a woman a right for education. I mean, it's like it was here, you know, the late 1800s. Women couldn't speak in public. We couldn't vote. We couldn't go
right.
to church and worship. I mean, there was nothing we could do for a long time. So we had it. People seem to forget how recently that was, you know,
but
here in America.
I have to mention that, again, Iran is a very big population, but
right.
the sentiments of the Iranians is not in par with the government.
Mm-hmm.
You know, as I said, they're young, they have access to the internet and social media, they know what's going on, they watch bootleg DVDs and, you know, the movie.
That's how they got Argo, right?
Argo. Mm-hmm. Argo was obviously never played in the theaters, but they know what's going on. They saw it on bootleg DVDs.
They respected that,
they,
that product.
They question what
mm-hmm.
their parents did.
Mm-hmm.
And even some of, today I read an article, one of the hostage takers is sorry for what he did.
Right, right.
So what the government says is not necessarily what the people think.
That's interesting. So what's next for you?
Well, not what I'm on a book tour.
You're on book tour, I know. Yes,
it's very timely.
Yeah.
This year was the 40th year of Iranian Revolution.
Of course.
Now it's the 40th year of the hostage taking. And Iran is so much in the news. And,
yeah.
But unfortunately, many Americans really don't know much about the country or the people.
Do you think that we could flip that switch? Do you think that there's hope that with enough consciousness and enough people like you, Jacqueline, going around and talking about this,
right,
that we can make that and change the tide a little bit?
Yes, because I think the language of humanity is love and respect.
Mm-hmm.
And knowledge is important to but, you know, my book explains what mm-hmm. happened, and people underneath it, people are all the same.
Yeah, no kidding. There's an understatement. There's the T-shirt, Jacqueline. We'll get you a T-shirt. We'll get you a bobblehead, because that's what we do around here in the States. I know that because I just interviewed Frank Robb, who mm-hmm. is the Gator Getter. And anyway, he has a bobblehead. So there you have it. You know you've made it when you've got a bobblehead. But first, you've got a book, and that's an unbelievable feat. We want everyone who's listening right now to go and get this book. It is From Miniskirt to Hijab, A Girl in Revolutionary Iran by Jacqueline Saper. It's spelled S-A-P-E-R. You can just Google her, Jacqueline Saper, S-A-P-E-R, and go on Amazon and click and buy that and be part of her journey. And I just really...
Jen, you know, the book was published by Potomac Books of the University of Nebraska Press.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, writing the book was it took me obviously 3.5 years, 8 hours a day to write it. But then I realized writing the book was the easy part. Getting it published is the difficult part,
mm-hmm.
because 70% of the books in the U.S. are self-published.
Correct.
Well, it took about almost 2 years for the book to be published, but the cover copy department of the University of Nebraska Press, it was out of my control. They chose this photo of me at the age of 17 for
the
cover.
But I love this photo. It's just like a stamp in time.
It is,
like I said,
yes.
Whether you think you're Jacqueline Smith from Charlie's Angels, that's the hair, but the face is just a beautiful, sweet girl through what you had to go through. So kudos to you for coming on the other side. I'm so grateful that you're here having this conversation. And hopefully you'll inspire other women who either want to write a book or go and get their education or just follow their dreams.
Thank you.
You did it.
I just want to make a comment that education at that time during the first years of the revolution was very difficult, because when the new government, not only they changed the constitution, but believe it or not, they closed down all higher education. All universities were closed down for 3 years. And to make the curriculum more Islamic,
mm-hmm.
and purge out all Western influences. So when they were reopened, there was a very quota for who could get in,
mm-hmm.
You know, for families of martyrs or war wounded or revolutionary wounded. And you needed a reference from the cleric of the nearby mosque and take a theology exam. That's why I couldn't get in.
Wow.
But I have to mention today, literacy is very high in Iran, and Iranian women are very educated.
That's wonderful to know.
Yes.
Okay, so change is happening. Jacqueline Saper, thank you for all you do, for your writing down your words and inspiring others. Everybody else, stay tuned and don't go anywhere. It's the